Hey, everybody, the day after Joe Biden becomes president of the United States, unity versus liberty. What's the difference? And does it matter? If you'd like to support this program, please do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. Support our production team, our research team, our video editors, our whole team here that works all day, all night to give you this content that you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by our friends at ExpressVPN. Protect yourself from big tech and big data, big brother, by getting a VPN that I trust, that I use, expressvpn.com/charlie. Unity versus liberty. Here's the difference, why it matters. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
With Turning Point USA and the movement that we have started, I've had the honor of traveling and visiting to college campuses and engage in rigorous debate with the next generation. When you talk to as many students as I do, you see several familiar themes. I see disillusionment with the media, a lack of hope in their job prospects. I hear them claim that they're victims and they deserve better. Whether college students realize it or not, they're forming ideologies that will affect the way they think and treat others for a lifetime. I'd like to recommend a great book to any young person in this time of life. It's called Reflections on the Existence of God by best-selling author Richard Simmons III. This guy never shies away from the hard questions of life. Reflections on the Existence of God is a collection of short essays that tackles the biggest question of all: does God exist? This book is well-researched and easy to read. One of the most important things a young person can do is to solidify their worldview. Our worldview informs our personal, social, and political lives. It helps us understand our purpose. So I'm challenging college students ask themselves life's toughest questions. Dive in and get this book today, Reflections on the Existence of God. Go to reflectionscharlie.com. That's reflectionscharlie.com. Then drop me a line at freedom@charliekirk.com with your thoughts. Welcome to this show. It's a very, very important day. It really is. We are here today
on the road.
Producer Andrew is here, and important news day, and we're going to go about it with positivity and good cheer. Yesterday, I know, was a tough day for a lot of you, and we have received a lot of your emails, freedom@charliekirk.com. A lot of people are saying, Charlie, what do we do? Where do we go from here? So let me just start first with some of you that did email us early in the morning. They said, Charlie, you don't understand. Joe Biden is going to get walking up to get sworn in, and everyone's going to get arrested, and Donald Trump will swoop in and get another 4 years. That did not happen. There was no plan. There was none of that. And so I just hope that there will be just a end to some of the hopium message boards that have been used over the last couple of years that have done nothing but just feed a fake narrative that breeds inactivity and also just, quite honestly, misinformation and disinformation. Joe Biden is now president of the United States. He was sworn in yesterday and promised unity. He promised that he wanted to unify the country around what we really weren't sure. So, Andrew, did you notice he really didn't tell us what he wanted to unify us around?
No, he was completely obtuse, I would also say inexact, and full of platitudes. That's my favorite way to describe the way that Democrats talk in modern America. They just say a bunch of niceties that don't really mean anything, and people just let them get away with it.
Yeah, and so I want to go to cut 65, and this is a very important cut where President Biden said, basically was declaring a new war. Now, mind you, I was not the only one that heard it this way. People on MSNBC and CNN said, I heard a battle cry, didn't you? And this is one war that even the anti-war left is very, very excited about. Let's play cut 65.
Now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat.
And so, look, I'm all for rising up against the most fringe, awful people that want to wish harm upon our country. But you also must do it within the frames of the Constitution. And also, when you start to use these open-ended words, political extremism, what does that mean? Political extremism. That's a label that could be thrown at basically anyone for any reason whatsoever that they just might disagree with. And so Cut 66 is Glenn Greenwald talking about this is a new domestic war on terror. Glenn Greenwald is a civil libertarian. He's one of the few. Where all the libertarians are in a moment like this, I don't know. And we're going to play a tape from John Brennan, the former head of either DNI or CIA. He ran CIA?
CIA.
He ran the CIA and lied in front of Congress multiple times. And John Brennan even said that it's libertarians that are on the list of worthy of opposition. Let's play tape of Glenn Greenwald.
Well, one thing I think that we're clearly seeing is the initiation of a new war on terror, which I don't say lightly. I say that because the Biden administration, what will be the Biden administration in about a week, is saying explicitly that they want, first of all, a new law to further criminalize domestic terrorism, even though every act that constitutes domestic terrorism is already criminalized. What they want to do is increase their power to monitor political groups, to infiltrate them, to criminalize activities that currently are not criminalized, nor should they be, whether it be advocacy of speech or other things. They're saying they want a new law similar to the way that the 9/11 attack and the emotions surrounding it was instantly seized upon to institute a whole series of new laws that endure to this very day.
And so what Glenn Greenwald is warning about, and God bless him for doing it, he's one of the few people on the left that is actually talking about how dangerous this can be, is that Democrats have found a new war on terror. Not one in the Kandahar Valley, not one in Baghdad, not one in Tripoli. But no, one in Philadelphia, one in Chicago, one in Los Angeles, and one in Denver. And it gives them now permission domestically, if they pass this legislatively, to infiltrate, monitor, and go after people that are on the political spectrum they don't like, including potentially libertarians. Now, John Brennan said that in an interview with MSNBC, and our team is going to get that clip. But the question should be, why are the Democrats doing this so quickly? And I learned something yesterday that I want to share with you. I saw something yesterday that I want to share with you, which I think is very important. And the Democrats wasted no time to go on offense. When Barack Obama was sworn into office in 2008, he did not hit the ground running as quickly as Joe Biden did yesterday. Within hours, there were 14 executive orders signed, maybe more, a press conference of 35 to 40 minutes that was hosted. They wasted no time to take back power in our government. And I think that Obama, who is probably the advisor and one of the chief architects behind all of this, advised them that if you do not play offense, Republicans will put you on defense. The margins are narrow. You need to play offense instantaneously. And I got to give Jen Psaki and all of them credit to go do a press conference the day you take over the government. That's risky. That is not normal. President Donald Trump's team did not host a press conference until, I believe, the following Monday or Tuesday. In fact, President Donald Trump did not start signing executive orders till the weekend after he was sworn in. He started with calls with foreign leaders, and Trump hit it very quickly. I mean, he hit the ground running and they were ready to go, but it was still very incremental. For Joe Biden, they are trying to make up for lost time. They're angry they were ever displaced from power. They are upset that they lost these 4 years, and they are focused on enacting whatever agenda that they think will better themselves or put America in a position that they desire. But one of the biggest things that they are trying to prevent is another Tea Party. I got my political start in the Tea Party back in 2009, 2010, 2011. It was a beautiful movement. Voices like Mark Levin became nationally known. Candidates such as even Marco Rubio were elected in surprise elections. The United States House of Representatives was taken out of Nancy Pelosi's control and given back in 2010. The Tea Party movement became the most powerful political movement for years, and it eventually turned into the MAGA movement. Many MAGA people were previously Tea Party people. Now, Tea Party people were called domestic terrorists. They were called racists. They were called xenophobes. completely and totally baselessly. With the tragic attack on the Capitol that happened just a couple weeks ago, the Democrats are now seizing this blanket narrative to go after a potential counter movement to anything that they do. And John Brennan is wasting no time advertising this. John Brennan, who I don't think has an official role in the administration, right?
Not yet.
On MSNBC saying, Joe Biden's team is wasting no time with laser-like focus to go after all these different sorts of groups. Play tape.
No, looking forward, that the members of the Biden team who have been nominated or have been appointed are now moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about what looks very similar to insurgency movements that we've seen overseas, mm-hmm. where they germinate in different parts of a country and they gain strength, and it brings together an unholy alliance frequently of religious extremists, authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians. And unfortunately, I think there has been this momentum that has been generated as a result of, unfortunately, the demagogic rhetoric of people that just departed government, but also those who continue in the halls of Congress.
That's John Brennan, even including libertarians. Now, why would he put that kind of grouping together? Because the domestic war on terror that they so desperately want to see launched will inevitably stave off another Tea Party. They're terrified of another reaction because they want to stay in political power perpetually. I don't like being nauseous. Obviously, it's very uncomfortable. You can't focus, and it ruins an otherwise fun time. That's why I'm excited about our new partner, Relief Band. Relief Band is the number one FDA-cleared anti-nausea wristband that has been clinically proven to quickly relieve and effectively prevent nausea and vomiting associated with motion sickness, anxiety, migraine, hangover, morning sickness, chemotherapy, and so much more. This product is 100% drug-free, non-drowsy, and provides all-natural relief with zero side effects. How it works is Relief Band stimulates a nerve in the wrist that travels to the part of the brain that controls the nausea. Relief Band is the only over-the-counter wearable device that has been used in hospitals and oncology clinics to treat nausea and vomiting. A lot of people I know have used Relief Band. It's something that I've heard great things about, quite honestly. So check it out. This year, ensure nausea is never the reason to miss out on important events. Go to reliefband.com. Use the promo code Kirk for 20% off. R-E-L-I-E-F-B-A-N-D.com. Use the promo code Kirk for 20% off. And I can tell you, people really like it. It's just for the Charlie Kirk Show listeners. Reliefband.com, promo code Kirk.
Okay, so we were unpacking in the previous segment, why is it that Democrats are so quick right now to want to declare a new domestic war on terror? That is Glenn Greenwald's words, not even our words. And Glenn Greenwald is a liberal. And the reason is multifold, and it's really important that we unpack this. The Democrats back in 2008 underestimated Republicans. They were so in charge. They had such overwhelming majorities in the House and the Senate. They thought there was no way Republicans could get back in control anytime soon, and they were wrong. Because of Obama's unpopular policies, because of the unpopular way that he handled a lot of different issues, including health care, there was a grassroots response that, yes, included libertarians, which is involved, which is included in John Brennan's list of kind of untouchables, like the political untouchables. And because of that, the Democrats don't want to make the same mistake that they made in 2008, which is underestimate the conservative movement. And so their strategy now is to describe 74 million people as potential insurgents. And that's exactly what John Brennan did. Now, interestingly, they never would consider what is happening in Seattle and Portland right now as actual insurgency. Did you know last night and yesterday there were zero, as far as we know of, Trump supporters engaging in violence or public protests? However, there were people that were anarchists and Antifa smashing Democrat headquarters in downtown Portland, setting fire to the original Starbucks. In fact, let's go to Cut 78 that shows this. Antifa on the move in Seattle, a little over 8 hours since Joe Biden was inaugurated. Isn't this domestic terrorism? Isn't this insurrection? Isn't this an insurgency? Play tape. And so that's just a video of them marching through the streets. Tear gas was used to actually disperse them because they tried to attack a federal courthouse. Remember when Donald Trump tried to do that in Portland and Seattle? I was on television with Chris Hahn back in July, who called those federal agents jackbooted thugs. I wonder if Chris Hahn and the left-wing intelligentsia would call them that now. Let's play Cut 95. These are federal agents using tear gas and other means to disperse Antifa. Now, interestingly, I bet Antifa was probably like, guys, why are you shooting at us? You haven't shot at us in like 4 years. Well, now that a Democrat is in control, all of a sudden, they don't want any form of opposition in the streets. Remember, we're in charge. We control the military. We have the guns, and you don't.
Well, I think this is actually an interesting take here, too, because they attacked the DNC in, I believe it was Seattle. It could have been Portland. One of those two cities, the actual Democrat headquarters was attacked, and it kind of reminded me, Charlie, of images from early in the summer when you saw like CNN's building get vandalized by BLM as well. What the Democrats either don't understand, there's two theories, right? Either the Democrats are, the establishment is also a target, right? They had that sign that says, we don't want Biden, we want revenge. Or they are being secretly behind the scenes sort of dispatched to sort of create additional further left momentum and pressure on the Democrat Party on purpose, right? To put pressure on Biden or the administration. It's an interesting debate. I'm not suggesting that's true. I'm just saying it's a theory that's being floated out there.
Or it just could be a bunch of, you know, anarchists that take to the streets often, and the Joe Biden doesn't want the appearance of discord on the streets. And you know, this is Joe Biden squashing actual opposition, where Donald Trump just wanted peace on the streets, and Joe Biden and the federal agents that's now under his jurisdiction and his control are acting more like the fascists that they were afraid that Donald Trump was going to be over the last 4 years. And so there is an idealism that Joe Biden is pushing forward, and this idealism is unity. But before we ever can unify, we must say, hold on, what is it we actually have in common? What are we unifying around? And this is the question that no one is asking that I want to unpack in our next segment, which is, what is the idealism that Joe Biden is trying to push forward? Because typically, idealism can actually just be a cover for something that is quite sinister in nature. You may not know this about me, but I'm really an undercover studier when it comes to the global economy. I love seeking out financial wisdom. And when it comes to my own portfolio, I value precious metals. Noble Gold is the firm I trust to buy gold and silver from, which can serve as a hedge, a protection in your IRA. First reason, they are a U.S.-based company. Supporting American businesses is so important. Second reason, Noble Gold has impeccable online reviews. A great online reputation is as much if you're going to trust a team's financial counsel. Third reason, Noble Gold has an experienced staff who works hard to make life easy for you. Any paperwork that might pop up takes less than 5 minutes to complete. Maybe it's an old 401k that needs a home. Maybe you're just like me and curious about your options. If so, grab a free gold guide by visiting noblegoldinvestments.com to learn more. I respect this team, and I know you will as well. Call Noble Gold right now. Tell them you heard about investing on my show. They'll find the right plan for your budget. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. noblegoldinvestments.com. Okay, so I want to encourage all of you to listen to a really informative podcast. I don't agree with this guy in everything, and I think he can be snarky at times and kind of just a little bit too full of himself. And that's, but he's really, really good. And that's Eric Weinstein and Glenn Beck's recent podcast. Eric Weinstein is a liberal. He's a mathematician. He's part of what he calls the intellectual dark web. And Eric Weinstein, I think, has been really fair lately, and Glenn Beck is obviously awesome. and they had this really good conversation back and forth about why are we in the position we are in our country. And Eric Weinstein said something I've heard him say before, where he said that the idealism of an era is usually the cover of the theft. So, for example, back in the 1990s, there was this entire movement to say, we are the world. You know, we are world citizens, which was a cover for betraying the fellow countrymen that you live with. For example, the ties that bind an Iowan and a Texan together, it really doesn't matter very much because you should just equally care about the Texan as you do as a Nicaraguan or the person in Vietnam. And that was, according to Eric Weinstein, a kind of corporate permission slip to put forward NAFTA, TPP, and expand some of the international corporate theft, as he put, that was really instituted. What happened in the early 2000s? Well, the early 2000s was the continuation of an idealism of the American dream is owning a home. Like, everyone needs that white picket fence. And so what ended up happening was that narrative, that cultural conversation resulted in the massive government-subsidized housing bubble. And the same could be said throughout the 80s, and every era has its idealism, as Eric Weinstein provocatively argues, and I think he's mostly right, that idealism is a cloak for something they're trying to take away from you or they're trying to destroy. And it hit me as I was listening that if we take that thesis statement as true, which I think it's generally right, and I think it's really interesting, that what is the idealism that is being pushed right now that very well might be the cover of the theft that they're trying to institute? Unity. That's the idealism.
Mm-hmm.
And no one asks the question, well, what are we exactly supposed to unify around? Wouldn't we rather have liberty, which means the capacity to have differences but still live together, than forced unity? That we must all sing in unison to the same song sheet? Isn't that potentially kind of dangerous? And so the idealism that is being put forward, and by the way, I am, as I think Andrew is, we're all suckers for idealism. It's built into us. Plato talked about this. Plato dealt in the clouds, in the sky, in what we could be as human beings. We are hardwired, part of us at least, to want to believe that the ideal can supersede reality. And sometimes that idealism is really necessary to improve a civilization. Sometimes that idealism is really helpful. That's how we abolished slavery. That's how we put forward the Civil Rights Act. Those are good things. But also sometimes idealism can be really, really dangerous, especially when you're at a point where the idealism is now being pushed forward to actually be regressive, to actually move things backwards. And so the idealism that is being pushed forward by these peacetime kleptocrats is that we all want to agree and unify that everything that happened in the last 4 years was awful. That's what they want you to unify around. Not that we're going to unify on there's only one race, the human race. No, 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 no. You're not allowed to say that. Not that we are going to unify around the idea of e pluribus unum, out of many one, liberty and id God we trust, which Dennis Prager, who's just feet away from us, says is the American Trinity. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
No. The unity that they want to bring to our country is much different. And that's just a very simple question that the activist media should ask Jen Psaki, who, again, deserves credit, and I say this non-sarcastically, for hosting a press conference the day you move into the White House. Pretty bold, I'm not going to lie. You're still getting the Keurig machine figured out, and she's hosting a press conference. I mean, that's...
I have thoughts on this, by the way.
Please.
I mean, it was such a thumb in the nose, and it was an intentional burn to the Trump administration, which obviously didn't hold daily press briefings. They tried at the beginning to be more regular, but it was such a war zone every time they entered, and it was such a waste of space.
No, I
and
totally agree.
People like
that.
Jim Acosta were getting famous and getting future book deals on it. So they rightly changed it up, and President Trump switched it up as well. He went and took questions right in front of Marine One and that sort of thing to sort of reclaim the power and get the cameras looking at him and away from them, which I thought was was a good move. But what it was she knew that she was walking into a room full of friendly reporters that were full of puff pieces that wanted to know, what did Joe Biden feel like when he went on when he went into the Oval Office? And she was like, oh, well, you know, he said it felt like coming home. It was like, you knew. And by the way, the other thing, if you were looking really closely, there was two. Originally, I had said there was one hostile question from Peter Ducey, and he asked a great question.
I like Peter Ducey.
He asked a great question, and I think it bodes well for his tenure as White House correspondent for Fox. But there was two. There was another one about abortion. She skipped over Peter Ducey, and she even said, if you notice, she says, I meant to get to you earlier. I'm sorry. I'm coming back to you. So she went almost the entire presser with softball questions. Nobody asked about the caravan from Honduras. Nobody asked about the coming economic malaise that will happen when you shut down the pipeline and you join the Paris Climate Accord and what that's going to do to business. Nobody asked about the Mexico City rule and that sort of thing. Well, actually, she did get one question about that, which she deferred, but it was just she knew it. She knew she was walking into friendly territory.
Well, not just friendly territory. She was walking. She was walking into fellow comrades.
Yeah,
and she was, and I don't use that word lightly. I mean, it's as if, oh, now we're all in this together. And so let's just give an example of this, just because in case you missed it. Again, I agree, Andrew, but I still think it's bold to host a press conference in a couple hours. I'm going to give them.
If I'm a Democrat, I do it every day. I don't think it's that bold.
The day you move in, that deserves not. I'm not saying credit. It's noteworthy.
No, it is, and it was a good move. It was strategically brilliant.
If I was a Democrat, they are playing this perfectly right now.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You put them on defense. You host the press conference. Republicans are still kind of grapple. Who's our leader? What's this? It's still significant. Okay, here's the tough questioning of they're asking Jen Psaki, while we're in the midst of a pandemic, millions of people are out of work. Treaties are getting flown all over the place. Iran wants a deal. Suicide bombers in Baghdad. What color is Air Force One going to be? Play tape.
A lighter note. Will he keep Donald Trump's Air Force One color scheme change?
This is such a good question. I have not had the opportunity to dig into that today, given the number of executive actions, orders, the inauguration, a few things happening. I will venture to get you an answer on that, and maybe we can talk about it in here tomorrow.
That's such a good question. Thank you. Oh my gosh!
It's
who,
like,
is that woman that asked that?
I don't know her name, actually. I think because now that we have a new administration, a lot of turnovers.
Well, here's the real question: why is Jen Psaki violating the mask mandate? That's the real question that people need to ask.
Well, Joe Biden himself violated the mask mandate. The EO that he signed at all federal buildings. He was at the Lincoln Memorial, caught on camera without his mask on.
But what is the so a question that Jen Psaki should have been asked is, okay.
Well, we have that clip, by the way.
We'll play it in a second. You want unity? You want to bring the country together? We think that's admirable. What are the values you want us to unite around? What does unity look like? And are you willing to achieve that idealism? Are you willing, as president, in your first 100 days, when you have the most political capital, absent other times when unexpected things happen, most political capital to say, stand down on impeachment? Are you willing to do that? That was Peter Ducey's question. Great question, by the way. Really good question.
Absolutely great question. And the fact that he's not—
And she totally dodged it.
Yeah, well, and what she did, and if you noticed what she did, she said, oh, well, that's up to Schumer and Pelosi. And it's like, no, you're the president of the United States. You are the the standard bearer, rather, of the Democrat Party now. You are the leader of the Democrat Party. Show some leadership.
Right. And by the way, if Biden would say no impeachment, they'd stand down. Now, they wouldn't necessarily want that. Nothing says— unifying the country, like trying to not remove a president, but say you can never run again and convict that president.
Oh, and start domestic surveillance on 75 million Americans.
That's coming next. Right. And what's so amazing to me, and I want to find the evidence of this, because Glenn Greenwald said Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are against this new domestic war on terror, which I've seen no evidence of. So I want to kind of see where Glenn Greenwald got that from.
Well, strange bedfellows, nevertheless, true.
I could see it sort of, but I think they're looking at it from more of a potential, this could be used against, you know, Islamic groups. However, the Democrats were always the harshest critics of the Patriot Act. Now they want a new Patriot Act. And guess what? Establishment Republicans want it too. You know why? Mitch McConnell would love nothing more, and the establishment Republicans, than to be able to say, those Tea Party, those MAGA people, we want to stifle them. And maybe not destroy them, but have them have the threat of surveillance, infiltration, no Fourth Amendment rights. We're going to treat them like 70 million Timothy McVeighs. If you don't know who Timothy McVeigh is, that's not even worth going through. Okay, let's go to cut 87. Nothing says uniting the country like saying the former president is an accessory to murder. Cut 87, like he's Al Capone.
Any of our colleagues collaborate? Well, that remains to be seen. We have to get the evidence of that. And if they did, they would be accessories to the crime. And the crime, in some cases, was murder.
Yeah.
And this president is an accessory to that crime.
Okay, this kind of language has got to stop. And look, you can be, and I've said this before, you can be critical that President Trump might not have used, he shouldn't have used certain phrases at that speech at the Ellipse. Maybe he was not specific enough about, you know, certain ways. He did say patriotically and peacefully protest.
Yep.
But I think that there's a kind of argument that can be made, a run of the, like just a normal argument that he might have excited the crowd and he should have just been really insistent about what he wanted to see happen. However, to all of a sudden then connect every single bad thing that happened 100% to President Donald Trump's speech is, first of all, inaccurate, and it runs against even the Washington Post's own reporting.
Yeah, and you said it first. She's got to knock off this language. Speaker Pelosi is what is she, 80? I honestly have never met another 80-year-old that speaks this at this tone, at this level of this vitriol. She's completely out of touch, and she is further dividing the nation. But why would you expect anything else from the leader of the House from San Francisco?
And so Joe Biden says he wants to unify the country. He wants to bring people together. Well, let me tell you what he should do, what he won't do, though. And even Obama did this back in 2008 and 2009, where Joe Biden should invite not like moderate Republicans, but he should invite actual grassroots conservatives that are and were MAGA people and say, I don't think you are Timothy McVeigh. And actually have a legitimate conversation. Because nothing that Joe Biden has done yet has proven or has said to us in any form or fashion whatsoever that the way he views half the country is not with resentment or bitterness or hatred, or not even bitterness or hatred, but he believes that they are part of what would be called a counterinsurgency in our country. So you want to heal? How many times do you have to hear, we need a real conversation about race in this country? You hear that all the time. You know what we need? We need a conversation about the political divide in this country. You want to see a truth and reconciliation project? Well, then why don't you bring in Trump and MAGA people to go talk to now their new government, as their new government is proposing a new domestic war on terror on them? Wouldn't it be nice if you talked to them? When was the last time Joe Biden sat down with a Trump voter? Has Joe Biden never sat down with a Trump voter? Has Joe Biden never talked to a Trump voter? Not a Republican that is like George W. Bush who whispers in Clyburn's ear that you're the greatest thing. You know, thank God you saved the Republic. No, I'm talking about a real Trump supporter. I'm talking about someone that has done thinking about this, that does not have bigotry, hatred, and resentment in their heart. Does he think that person exists? Does Joe Biden have any sort of concern for those people? Or is he just going to rule with an iron fist, but also say, unity, 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 I'm going to stamp out the opposition?
Yeah, I mean, you just asked a question. It legitimately got me thinking. Does he think these people even exist? That's a heck of a question. I genuinely think he does know that, but I wonder if certain people in his party don't. I mean, if you look at the pages of The Atlantic, I was browsing them yesterday. Their argument right now, and this is obviously the intelligentsia of the left, their argument is, can you redeem MAGA people? Can you redeem Trumpists? Are they so irredeemable that you can't bring them back from the brink of extremism?
And Trump Biden will never do this because he will get such a left wing flack from his flank for even talking to Trump supporters, even having the conversation, even saying, you know what? I'm president, but I want to be a president of all Americans. That's what he said. When was the last time Joe Biden sat down, if at all, for 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, and heard it from the mouth of a dedicated Trump MAGA supporter of why they voted for Trump and what's really in their heart? Or is he just going to continue to govern the country through a lens of MSNBC, CNN, and Vox.com, of what all the staffers say Trump supporters are. Because I could tell you what, and we've been through this multiple times, that, and I said this on television, Trump supporters were repulsed by what happened at the Capitol.
That's right.
Some people got caught up in it. We've been through the different groups, in fact, but more and more evidence is coming out that these fringe groups that I've never heard of before, Boogaloo, Boys, Oath Keepers, whatever, they were the ones that had pre-planning, that had an agenda, and they were the ones that were instigating. We've played plenty of tape here about suspicious behavior. Pink hat woman screaming through a megaphone about schematics, architecture, points of entry. The people changing in the trees from black to MAGA gear. The BLM incorporated activists that stormed the Capitol. John Sullivan and his friend. And so the question is, will Joe Biden offer any nuance whatsoever? Again, I love my country, and I'm praying, and I know this probably won't happen, that he'll be a moderate in many things. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. If you want to email me directly, email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. And again, if you'd like to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless you. Talk to you soon.